I've been living with HIV since the late 80s, early 90s possibly. I was only officially diagnosed in the early 2000s. That was a choice I made. I had quite a number of close friends who died quite unexpectedly and for no obvious reason way back in the 80s. And eventually we sort of heard about this weird illness or disease that was going around. And we kept thinking, oh, it won't get to us. We're a bit too out of the way. We're not in the city, the main city or anything like that. We don't have a huge club scene or anything like that. It'll not get to us. I mean, by the mid-80s, we'd only just got the first gay nightclub in the area. And OK, yeah, we enjoyed it a lot. We were in there most nights, even if it involved travelling. And, yeah, we probably had a lot of sex with people that we wouldn't necessarily have met previously. And we drank a hell of a lot. I think we kept the brewery afloat. But by the time we'd heard that it had been recognised that the main way that this disease was being transmitted was through sex, we all thought, that's a bit too late for us. And then we realised that the people that were missing from our immediate sort of social group had already died of this weird disease. We thought, oh, which one of us is going to be next? And strangely, nothing happened. The few of us just seemed to be still there. We did an awful lot of funerals and so on and so forth, and an awful lot of fundraising right at the start, but then it just became a bit weird. It was a bit like living in a black hole. Nothing happened. Eventually, some friends of ours told us that if you went to Manchester or down to London, you could get tests done. But they cost a fortune. They weren't very reliable. And you waited forever to get the results. We knew a few people who could afford to go and get them done. But they were in a right state waiting for the results. And even when they had the results, they didn't know what to do with them because there was nothing to say that there was going to be a cure, a treatment, whether they were going to drop dead this week, next week, or whether just nothing was going to happen. About the time that all of this really started to kick off with testing and all that sort of thing, we started to notice that people were asking questions. People were asking things like, have you ever had an AIDS test? And I'm not a very good liar. But it kept appearing on things like my travel insurance forms, my house insurance forms. And I kept thinking, I don't want to answer that. But on the other hand, I want to be truthful because I don't want them to turn around and say, you lied on your application form. So I decided not to get tested. If I was going to go, I would hopefully go as quickly as all my other mates had gone, and nobody would be any the wiser. Because, I mean, most of the people that died early on, it was always put down to things like, oh, they got pneumonia. So-and-so, he had baker's lung because he worked in a bakery. So-and-so had possibly carbon monoxide poisoning because he was found dead in the cab of his wagon that he used to drive. Weird and wonderful excuses. So I just didn't bother getting tested. But what I was aware of was the fact that a lot of people that I'd slept with over the years were now dead. So the chances of me actually not having AIDS or being HIV positive, as it then became known, were quite remote. But then times started to change. For me personally, I changed jobs. I had a very responsible job. I had an elderly mother to look after. I had properties to manage. I loved my holidays abroad. And I still felt fit and well and able to do all of that. So I thought, no, you can't have it. Around about the early 2000s, one of the jobs I got at work involved me giving a training course to my care staff about looking after people with HIV. And as I read upon all the notes, I suddenly thought to myself, this is a little bit hypocritical. You're going and giving a training session about looking after people living with HIV. Yes, you're a gay man, which is probably why I was given the course to deliver anyway. But I've never done the basic thing. I've never had a test. And over the last 6 months of my mother's life, she was in palliative care. And we watched with horror from her fifth floor window where we went for the daily visits, as there was an awful lot of building work going on next door. And about 12 months after she died, I drove past the hospital, and this pile of building work that had so angered us whilst mother was sort of on her last legs was now open. And it was the brand new sexual health clinic. We'd never had one before anywhere in the town. And I thought, it's a sign. So I literally drove up to the front of the building, walked in and said, are you open? And she went, yes, just. We opened today, we've not had any patients yet. I said, oh, great, can I be your first patient? And she said, well, what would you like? I said, I would like a full MOT, check me for everything. And it was done within an hour. And she said, if there's anything you need to know, we'll give you a ring. I said, absolutely fine. And about a week later, I got a phone call and she said, we'd like you to come in. And I said, oh, okay. So I went in and she said, I'm very sorry to tell you, but your HIV test has come back positive. I said, oh, thank God for that. And she went, well, that's an odd reaction. I said, well, for years I've been convinced that I must be because of all the people that I'd been with who subsequently died. I said, but why aren't I dead? And she said, no idea. So eventually I was referred to a consultant and he said, don't worry about it, you're still fit, healthy, okay, you've got HIV, we've got run some numbers, your viral load is up in the millions, your CD4 is, I think at the time it was about 500 or something like that. So you're not going to die anytime soon. We'll see you in 12 months. And I thought, oh, right, okay. And that was it. It was very strange because all of a sudden I had, oh, I've got HIV. Oh, well, I've never said to anybody, I don't have HIV. When I've had casual sex with somebody, if they've asked, I've always said, oh, I've not been tested. But chances are I probably am, without going into reams of history. And everything carried on, and I was fine. And I don't know whether it was a mental trigger or what, but all of a sudden, within the first 12 months of me getting that diagnosis, I had one nasty illness after another. And I kept thinking, I've not been ill for years. I've never had a day off sick. I've not had a day off sick in 5 years. What's going on? And then talking to other friends of mine, they kept saying, well, are you not on meds yet? And I went, no. So when I went and saw the consultant and had my blood drawn, I said, by the way, what do you have to do to get on meds here? And he went, oh, you've to be admitted to hospital. You've got to have an age-defining illness before you get meds here. Oh, right. So all the stomach upsets, the funny rashes, all that sort of thing. Oh, they're nothing. You'll be fine. So, as I say, I spoke to some friends of mine and they kept saying, yeah, but Manchester, Newcastle, places like that, as soon as you get diagnosed, they're putting people on meds. I don't know. We're thinking about. And then, as time went on, I went through a rather hellish period where I got myself into a really bad relationship and had to be basically rescued from the situation. And the friends that rescued me basically gave me an option. Right, you can either come here, come and move to Manchester, or you can move to Newcastle. Take your pick. And I thought, I hate Manchester. I'll try Newcastle, I've never been there. So I ended up over here. I actually ended up in County Durham for the first 3 years. But then I moved into Newcastle itself. Best thing I ever did. But the very first time that I saw Ashley Price at 119, he looked at me, notes, and he went, why are you not on meds? All right. I don't know. No. You start on meds this week. No two ways about it. And I mean, by the time they ran the bloods, I didn't just have HIV, I had hepatitis C as well. I'd already gone through a chronic E. coli infection. And he went, how you survived not being on meds, I don't know. But a number of years later, I'm still around. And I keep having these little sort of setbacks. But these days it's mainly other people panicking about, are you sure you're all right? Yes, I'm fine. Why? Oh, your kidney functions a bit off, or your liver functions a bit off. And I'm thinking, right. So I had this earlier this year. My kidney function was off. Oh, panic, panic, panic. And I kept thinking, shouldn't I feel ill or something if my kidneys are really that bad? Still felt fine. I was sent for blood tests every other week. I had scans done. And then last week, I went to see the consultant nephrologist at the Freeman. And she looked at the test results and she went, she said, I've been looking at your history. She said, you're about 34% kidney function now. She said, it did drop. Back about 34. She said, for a man of your age, with all that bloody medication on board that you've had in the past, she said, I'm not surprised. She said, that's brilliant. She said, you're only just on the level where we would see you. She said, usually people come into us where they've only got like 10% kidney function going on. So you're fine. Oh, thank goodness for that. Because I keep thinking, well, yes, I do feel fine. And especially over this last 2 years, since I eventually got in to see a series of the right people, the pain clinic and the cholesterol clinic, and got all the medications actually sorted out properly, made a heck of a difference. Because all of a sudden, I'm not pre-diabetic anymore. I don't have high cholesterol anymore. I'm actually on less blood pressure medication than they thought I was on. And my blood pressure's fine. And I've lost weight. So you can live a good, healthy life. And it doesn't take a lot of effort. It doesn't take handfuls of pills every day. It's just being sensible. You can't change history. You can't alter things. I mean, when I was growing up, I grew up in a small village, semi-rural. And yes, there were gay people around. We had thinking about it now as an adult, we had at least three lesbian couples lived on the main road. And there were at least two other gay men in the village that were, now looking back in hindsight, were extremely darned obvious. But nobody ever mentioned it. Nobody ever said a word. It was totally accepted. Nobody, even in the town, nobody talks about, you know, sort of things being different. We just did what we did and enjoyed it. And I mean, the weird thing was when all this sort of the AIDS crisis started and they kept saying, oh, well, the only safe way of having sex is protected sex. And we went, what do you mean by that? Because in my day, the only way that you could buy condoms was by going to the chemist's counter and asking for them. I mean, gay men used to use some very strange substances for lubrication because the only recognised lubrication, you had to go to the chemist's counter and ask the pharmacist for. And people would get there and buy toothpaste instead. Because it was embarrassing. And I mean, the only men who needed condoms, really, in those days, were men who were having sex with women that they didn't want to get pregnant. That's what a condom was for. It was to stop a pregnancy. Well, we were two blokes at it like rabbits, and neither of us was going to get pregnant. So, in our heads, we were having safe sex. You don't know. Things change. Times change. And, I mean, now we have PrEP and all this sort of thing, which is all very well, but I have this thing in the back of my head. It's like when the pill first came in for women, and women went, whoopee, I can take a pill every day and I'll not get pregnant. And they did. And then how many years down the line did we suddenly discover that taking the pill every day was giving them breast cancer and things like that? So you've got these young gay men, and some straight ones as well, I assume, taking PrEP every day, just in case. Because you don't plan to have sex, necessarily. More often than not, it's just a spur-of-the-moment thing. So, say, oh, I'll take my pill, I'll take my PrEP on Friday, Saturday, and perhaps one day during the week, just in case. It's not going to work. So if you're taking it all this time, nobody knows what it's actually going to do to you, taking it preemptively over such a long, for any length of time. So I'm always a little bit dubious about things like that. You know, the best advice I can give to anybody now is go get tested regularly. Because we always did, believe it or not. I know we didn't get tested for HIV because it wasn't part of the testing schedule. You had to ask. Occasionally, if you went somewhere where the staff were relatively, shall we say, up to date, they might go, oh, would you like an HIV test? Which is a bit like, say, to a motorist, would you like an MOT doing on your car? And you think, last time I had an MOT done, it cost me 500 quid or more. You don't say, no, I love, I'll have the free ones. I'll have the important ones. Have I got HIV? Have I got syphilis? Have I got gonorrhea? Have I got chlamydia? We'll leave it at that, you know. Have I got genital warts? No, fine. So you did all of that on a regular basis. But would you like an HIV test? No, no. Are you having a special offer on them this week? No. We didn't do it. But now, I would still like to see it just as part of the package, so that people don't get asked, would you like, you know, if you go in for a sexual health test, you know, for the battery, you get everything, including the HIV test. And I think it should be rolled out the same in hospital wards as well. That's my personal opinion. I think it should be a natural set of tests. When they do your bloods, when you go into A&E, if you've had an accident or anything like that, they should automatically include HIV in that panel. Because it's important.